Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I remember being your little girl, right? I felt like I was your world and you were my world. You had a new marriage, more kids and that life. And then I was being difficult. I remember that we wouldn't hug or say goodnight and stuff like that.
There is also a background to that. There's a stigma to fathers raising daughters.
Kia ora, we're your hosts, Julie
and Sarade. We travelled around Aotearoa with our soundie Joey, meeting immigrant whānau, listening to stories and discovering what is said or not said between different generations.
These stories warmed our hearts and broke our hearts. And over this series, we invite you too to listen in on conversations with my immigrant parents. This episode of the podcast features Donnelly and Alfredo Bernal. Alfredo lives in Kirikiriroa and is originally from the Philippines. He was 29 when he came to Aotearoa in 1995. Back home, he was a GP, but he realised when he got here that he would need to spend years retraining to be able to practice as a doctor here. And, as is the case for many new migrants, he couldn't afford to do so.
Shortly after arriving, Alfredo met Donnelly's mum, who was also from the Philippines and who had a daughter from a previous relationship when they met. Alfredo and Donnelly's mum were married, but they separated when Donnelly was 18 months old.
My dad's name is Alfredo. He is from Cagayan de Oro in the Philippines. He is a very reserved man on the outside, but on the inside, he's extremely loving and caring. I'm very close to my dad, and I can talk to him about anything, and he's always been there for everything. I'm grateful that he's that person in my life.
My daughter's name is Donnelly Bernal. She grew up in New Zealand. She is kind and very determined person. I believe Donnelly has gone through a lot, and she's still here, and she's still fighting.
When I first came here, I stayed with your auntie, and they picked me up from Auckland Airport. And my first impression when the plane landed was, it's very quiet. I've always been wondering, where are the people? So driving down to Hamilton, again, I cannot see houses, I cannot see people. In your tita's house, where I stayed for a few months, I can almost hear my own breathing. It's just so, so quiet at nighttime. Very dark and quiet. So coming from the Philippines, which is populated, it's quite a stark contrast.
So what was it like for you coming here and not continuing your profession of being a GP?
It was challenging at first, but I don't cry over spilled milk. So I moved on to Plan B straight away. I was also involved in teaching back in the Philippines anyway. So the next thing I did was teach. Oh, this was after all those healthcare or caregiving jobs that I was doing part-time. I joined a training company in Huntley. I don't know, you would have remembered that.
Was it the Māori one?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was training people on computing.
Yeah.
And that was cool. I'm pretty sure you remember us traveling there every day.
Mm-hmm.
In that little green Toyota.
Listening to Spice Girls?
Yes. So it wasn't really difficult for me as such. There's always like at the back of my mind, what would it be like if I stayed there in the Philippines and carried on with my profession? But it is what it is.
In this next bit, Alfredo speaks about his two marriages. He has teenage boys, Giovanni and Antonio, with his second wife, who he is no longer married to.
My first marriage is shorter than my second, simply because I've always thought that marriage is a lifetime thing. You don't get unmarried. Again, that's in my head. I grew up in an environment where there's no such thing as divorce. You're married for life. So when I married your mom, I've always thought that I will be married for life. But unfortunately, it didn't work. Honestly, I cannot remember why. And in this, my second marriage, I tried harder. So that lasted longer.
I guess I was a child, but I remember hearing theories from people in our family, like, you know, because they talk about why you and my mom separated. But just as a child, absorbing all these different theories from other people as opposed to from my parents themselves.
They're not theories from people that, you know, just blurt out theories left, right,
well,
and center.
Well, they do tend to do that.
You need to think about the person's credibility when they talk about something.
Yeah, I know, but when you're a child, you just, you know, you believe it until, you know, there's something else to believe.
I'm actually thinking now that you're saying that, because you're not really sure whether I forgot or I just didn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I want to talk to your mum and ask her what went wrong.
But you know what? She's...
I know that she's got her own view of what happened.
Yeah.
And it could be very, very different to my view of what happened.
Yeah.
But I think that is the fundamental of why a marriage would break, because the communication has broken. So what her understanding of what happened and what my understanding of what happened would be very, very different.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like sitting down with her and asking her that question.
I wonder if she'll answer.
I think she will.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think she'll get flustered and not want to talk about it?
I think she will answer in her own way, and you know what that means.
Not answering it. I don't know. I love my mom.
Yeah.
I really related to what Donnelly was saying about growing up hearing theories about why her parents split up. And I feel like I grew up with a lot of family members talking bad about other family members. And I think as a child, that's really hard to process. And you don't obviously want to take anyone's side, but you're kind of blasted with these opinions. And I just really related to the trauma of growing up with different people saying bad stuff about your parents.
And definitely hard to not take an adult's opinions as law when you're a child, eh?
And you're trying to protect these different family members, so you don't want to tell someone that someone's been saying this about them or...
Yeah, that's stressful. So when Donnelly's mum and dad separated, Alfredo got sole custody of Donnelly. And obviously this is quite unusual. Kids largely end up with their mums when their parents separate still, for whatever reason. I think that societal norms probably has a bit to do with it. Obviously, of course, there are lots of fathers who, unlike Alfredo, are not willing to step into a larger parenting role. I think courts probably often side with mums quite a bit of the time. I guess that wage equity has quite a bit to do with how this shakes out too.
Yeah, totally. In this next section, Alfredo and Donnelly reflect on what their early years together were like.
I mean, I can imagine how hard it was for you because of all, you know, the court battles and stuff, but I actually reflect on my early childhood years before going to school as very positive. Even though I do remember having separation anxiety, like screaming and trying to climb the fence at kindy. When you were there, it was all resolved and you picked me up again.
I don't know if it's me or you, but you've always been clingy. I mean, you were very happy when we were together. Even when you were a child, I can remember when you were still with your mum and then I pick you up for a weekend. And every time I drop you off, you would be crying and crying and crying. So what I would do is I'll drive around Collins Road, Temple View, until you fall asleep and then lift up the whole car seat and put you in your mum's lounge so that you were asleep when I left. And then when you went to school, of course, there's that problem of you climbing over the fence because you don't want dad leaving. But I think it went better. Yeah, it became better later on.
Maybe if you were more detached as a parent, then I'd be more independent.
Yeah. As a parent, you always think that because there's no parent-child manual, you don't come to this world with a manual, so you sort of wing it. And there are always times when I think, oh, what could have I done better? But most of these things are retrospective anyway, so I can't do anything about that anymore. But I've always believed that as you grow into an adult, that you can recognize too that when you are raising your own kids, the things that you don't like about your parents are the things that you won't do, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember, for example, my dad didn't want to buy any appliances.
Didn't want to, or he couldn't afford it?
I don't think he wanted to. It was not him.
It's the way you have all these gadgets.
Yeah, so I've got all my gadgets. And the other thing, too, is my dad was very, very strict. Like, hugging is not a thing. We don't hug. I don't remember my parents kissing me or whatever.
But you talked about your dad holding you when you were small, so obviously you remember that.
Yes.
What age does that stop?
When he can no longer hold me because I'm too heavy.
Right. Okay. And then after that, no hugging.
Yeah, there's no hugging. You don't greet people by hugging them and all that. Of course, that's changed now. Well, I'm in New Zealand. The other thing, too, that I really, really struggle with is because I'm male, I believe that my siblings think that, you know, I should just get on with it. I think I mentioned this to your cousin, that no one even asked me, how am I? Am I doing okay? Especially on the challenging dates. And I just make that theory that because they think that I'm male, I'll just get on with it. I would like more from my family, especially from my mum, because she's gone through grieving process several times. I would want more. But, I mean, I don't know what they're thinking, but I'm just presuming that that's what it is. Because I'm male, I should just get on with it. But in my own need, what I've done is I've availed of all the available resources, either online or whatever resources I've got at work that I can tap into just to help me through that process. Because I'm closer to my nieces and nephews. When it comes to things like that, for example, I need support, I feel like I can go to my nephews and nieces more than my sisters, maybe because I'm the youngest.
So you're cool.
Like, I would like to think that I'm the cool uncle, but also I can get support from them in that regard. And I've been trying to find somebody who will be the key person in your generation to make sure that every one of you is okay, that there's always going to be somebody who would ask somebody, are you okay? Because I'm not going to be here in the future. Your aunties are not going to be here in the future. So there's only going to be you guys. And I want that network to be established, that support to be already established. So I'm pushing for the key people to play an active role in terms of making sure that everyone in the family is safe and okay. I've tapped shoulders already.
To be the warriors to carry the torch.
Yes.
When I think about your generation, I think of like people that can't really talk about anything too difficult or taboo. Or so I think of, you know, the judgmental side. You're saying that you were closer to my generation, my cousins, when it comes to those things. So maybe it's because we can't have those conversations. Well, it's normal for us. Because I see, like, the older generation as being a bit standoffish because, you know, my teenage years, difficult times during that. I remember at the time you didn't really know what to do and the older people were, like, had the same sort of idea. Well, depression doesn't exist in the Philippines, you know, because everyone's trying to survive, trying to get food, water, shelter, whatever. So I think you're at a loss because everyone there is, well, the norm is to be Catholic in the Philippines. So I remember a comment that someone gave to you about me and they said, well, why didn't you send her to church? You should have sent her to church so that she wouldn't be, you know, depressed and suicidal or whatever. As if it was your fault and you'd done something wrong by not raising me the way that all the other Filipinos are raised.
It's really hard hearing that someone might be struggling and they just might not have the space to be able to talk to someone about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's probably right, you know, that men really struggle to find, probably especially male friends, to have conversations with about, like, times that they feel really vulnerable and times that they feel really scared. And I think I'm always trying to be aware of the fact that men's mental health is a really big problem. And I think that I have a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to that being brought up because so often it gets brought up in order to silence women
mm-hmm.
who are trying to talk about things that they're going through, but it does stand alone and it doesn't only need to be brought up to oppose women.
It's not a binary. We're just because we are acknowledging how men are affected by the patriarchy, it doesn't affect how much women are also affected and suffering. People of all genders.
There's also a total intersection of things in this section because Alfredo's talking about people don't ask him how he is because he's a man. And then Donnelly and Alfredo also explore that in the Philippines, a lot of people don't have the privilege of being able to deal with their mental health because mm-hmm. there's
survival
to think about. And then if the church is a really big presence in your life, that can be a fallback for coping with really difficult life events instead of therapy and instead of sort of changing the ways that we talk to each other.
I think it's okay for us to acknowledge that nuance, and I think what you are saying about finding it difficult to be able to acknowledge how men are affected in different ways, yeah, I can totally see how that's really difficult from, like, a feminist perspective. And
not even that it's difficult, just that there's so many instances of it being brought up in such a toxic way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you try and talk about racism and white people bring up the Irish. And it's like, yeah, Ireland has suffered for many years and they were colonised, but when it's brought up to shut up a person of colour, you obviously don't want to give it the space. You can't, like, hold those two things in the same breath.
With gender in particular, it manifests differently in that as a result of patriarchal norms, like, this is how men are affected in a different way
yes.
to how
yes.
women and other genders
but
are affected.
But patriarchy hurts everyone, and that's the point, right? Toxic masculinity is bad for every single gender, and that is the point.
Yeah.
Donnelly moved in with her mum when she was 15, after having lived with her dad her whole life. She moved because she found her dad to be too strict. Her mental health had declined, and she thought a change might help.
Yeah, I remember being your little girl, right? And I felt like I was your world and you were my world. And then we had a new marriage, more kids and that life. And then that ended and then different dynamics. And then me going through high school, not enjoying it for different reasons. And then I was being difficult. I remember that we wouldn't hug or say goodnight and stuff like that. But then after I went to counselling, I think that was one of the things that we said we had to do. We had to hug each other before we go to bed and say goodnight. I don't know why I thought of that, but I think it was like a moment where we're trying to make our relationship better, make our communication better.
I do agree with that. With the new family, two more new kids. And I also remember that I was traveling a lot at some point in time, so I wasn't home. I believe that we could have been closer at that time, but there has been some circumstances, life circumstances, that just prevented that from happening. There is also a background to that. I remember there's a stigma to fathers raising daughters. I can remember when I first got you, we had to sleep in a sofa, both of us. Back then, I was going through counseling and stuff, and even the counselor said to me that you need to put your daughter in another room. And she said that in a way that it made me feel guilty. And I really, really, in my head, I got so angry, but I just contained my anger. When you went through depression, one thing that they were also exploring is whether you've been abused as a child. And that also really, really got me angry. I feel like if that was happening in your society, you shouldn't be judging me and using that, again, the box that you think that there's a father, there's a daughter, something's likely to happen. And I got so angry with that. Even the suggestion of it. I might even want to hug you, but I don't want to hug you because I feel like I'm being judged. Going through play group, for example, mother's group and all that, and then they're thinking, why is there a man here? It's like, why is it that you're the one looking after your daughter? It's like, why not? I don't know. I get angry thinking about it.
Yeah, I get sad thinking about it because I feel so grateful to have a dad. Not everyone does. It's kind of normal for some people, you know, like yeah. The dad's not in the picture, well.
Actually, it's not even just women thinking that, because there's also men who've made comments to me that said, why are you looking after your child? You should let the mother look after the child. I'm like, yeah. I don't think so, mate.
Yeah. It just seems like, because it rarely exists in their world, that it just can't possibly exist for us, you know? I mean, I would be so curious to meet another person who was raised by their dad, you know, and not feel so weird for it. Yeah, I felt that when I was in school, because people would be talking, saying, my mom, my mom, my mom. But for me, it was my dad, and they'd be like, oh, where's your mom? What happened to your mom? Do you miss your mom? It's like, you don't know, my dad is my mom. And then being pregnant with Vas and people just assuming that I wanted my mother, it's like, no, you really don't understand. I remember telling midwives and counselors and stuff that if my dad is not going to be at my birth, then I might as well go walk into the forest and have my baby by myself. That's what it would feel like if my dad wasn't there.
Yeah. You should just have said, my dad is quite capable of delivering babies. Thank you very much. He's delivered so many babies.
When Donnelly was 16, she fell pregnant with her son, Vasily. Donnelly was raised in a Catholic household, and here she explains what telling her family was like.
I remember my cousin.
Yes.
You know, I told her first because she had a baby young. Not as young as me, but young. I told her that I was planning to abort, and she wanted me to tell you so that you could convince me to not do that because our family's quite pro-life. But it didn't go how she thought it would go, and I'm not sure how I thought it would go, but it was quite brutal. It was really quite brutal. I'm wondering what your anger was about, because in my mind, I feel like, because I didn't talk to my mother for a while, I feel like her anger was from her pride of looking bad because I was supposed to be living with her. We were supposed to go on a holiday together. I was supposed to do the pageant. You know, she's got a lot of friends, a lot of Filipino friends. And so I felt like, judging by some of the things that she said, It would have made her look bad because I happened to have gotten pregnant when I was supposed to be living with her. But what do you think your anger was about?
I don't even remember being angry.
Oh, really? Yeah. Really now? Okay.
All I remembered.
Okay.
All I remembered is, honestly.
Yeah?
Honestly, I don't remember being angry. All I remembered at that time is that I rang your mum.
Yeah.
Got her over.
Yeah, you were angry. You rang my mum. She came over so she could be angry too. I just remember having so many brutal things said about me that were true or not true in so many different ways. And it just went on for and on and on. It's like, I just don't want to think of a different way to say this. I mean, that was hard. That night was really hard. But after that, you just switched and you're like, all the things that I expected that I'd get kicked out didn't happen. You just accepted me and said that I could still live here and that you wanted me to make a decision and own my decision and make the right decision. You were still there for me the whole way.
I've got selective memory loss.
Right.
Or things that I don't want to remember. I mean, I can vividly remember that it was in this lounge. Your cousin was here. Maybe I was angry, but I don't remember the feeling, and I don't remember. All I remembered was that I said, "We'll bring your mom over, so your mom needs to know as well." And then all I remembered from that, of course, is the drama that came after, because the two camps that happened, and one was pro and the other's anti. And then my mother instinct kicked in, where I had to make sure that you are safe, make sure that you are supported through the process, make sure that you get all the resources required for whatever. The only thing that I was not supporting you was that I didn't want to go to the antenatal classes.
Yeah.
So all those things I remember.
I guess I started feeling like a parent when it was real, you know, like I had Vas and I was, you know, waking up to feed him and then you'd go to work and I'd be at home by myself and just me and him. I'm responsible for him, you know, he's my child. Yeah, I felt like I was more on your page. Understood. How it's not so easy now. Sometimes we don't make the best decisions, or maybe we just make the best with what we can do in that moment as a parent. So I think I just became more understanding and more forgiving when I had my own child. I guess maybe as a parent you could start taking me more seriously when my child was actually here. I think a lot of people who aren't parents like to think that they know that you should do this to be a good parent or you should do that, but they haven't actually been in the arena themselves.
You had Vas, but I was always there. I was always telling you what to do. Even your brothers keep telling me, I keep telling them what to do. I'm a parent, so that's what we do.
It didn't make me feel good. When I really needed having you take over was such a relief because I trust you so much. I found that even when I wasn't here, like I wasn't around you in your house, if I was at my mom's where I was living, I would hear your voice in those hard moments, your voice in my head. It kind of like criticisms towards myself that I wasn't good enough as a mother. I wasn't getting the result that I felt like you would get or that you think I should have.
I wonder that now, because like when I had you, I didn't have my parents telling me what to do, of course. Obviously, I grew up in a very, very different environment. I never had that question in my mind as to how am I going to raise a child, for example. It's like just like in my nature that I know how to raise a child and I know what the challenges are in terms of mothers, for example, lack of sleep. Or when the baby just carries on crying and crying and crying and all that. I'm quite confident that I can handle that situation.
One of the things that I feel guilty for when I reflect on my 4 years and 3 months of being Vlas's mother while he was out in this world. I know that you're just doing what you did and that you mean well. Like, throughout my whole life, because you've been such a strong influence on me, that I just really took on board everything that you said. I think in some ways I was too hard on myself and too hard on Vlas. I would parent from a place of insecurity rather than love and really take it out on him and be like, you know, when he misbehaves, it made me feel like he was just being a child. But it made me feel like it's just really reflecting on me as not being good enough as a mother. I just remember hearing things in my head that I didn't need to recycle in my mind, but I had from, I guess, your influence, because you're confident.
I feel like it's really hard to listen to Donnelly be so hard on herself as a mother raising a child when she was still so young herself.
Yeah, totally.
So as Donnelly touched on, Vasily passed away very suddenly at age 4. He had asthma, and one morning he experienced some severe complications relating to his asthma.
I remember that morning. I got up early to bake cheese bread, because Vas asked for it. That's what he wanted for breakfast. But he never ate any because he was so sick. That's when then I rang you and asked you to take him to the doctor so he gets additional medication. And because I was so tired, by the time you left, I went to bed. I sleep, and then your mom rang. She didn't say what. She just said, you need to come now. So I got myself organized, and as I drove into your mom's place, the ambulance was just driving out. And they were telling me to go to the hospital. Your brothers and I went there. They showed us in. And I was observing the activities that the doctors and the resuscitation team were doing. And I can remember exactly what was in my head, because I was doing my own assessment, looking at the instruments and stuff. And I vividly remember telling you that at some point they're gonna stop doing what they were doing. Because I knew them trying every avenue that they can bring him back. Going through all of those and considering the amount of time that has lapsed already. So I went into that mode of, not that grandfather mode, but the mode of logical thing. Next thing they're going to do, they're going to stop. That was interesting, because the police were called and they were retracing everything that happened prior to that event. When you have an investigation being done, it's like, you people don't know. We love this child so much. You just don't know. You're just going through the motions of asking the questions. But they don't know. You just don't know how much we love this child.
There is this thing that you had said, or you'd occasionally say, when Vlas was still here. I remember you talked about how hard it would be to lose your child. You had all your kids at the time. I had my one child still here, so it was just a concept that if it was your only child, imagine losing your only child, that would be so hard. And I remember hearing this more than once. But then it actually happened.
Yeah, I remember that. I'm very, like, open to conversation. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember talking about death, for example. I've always said that, you know, we're all here temporarily. We will all die. It's just a matter of time. Of course, I say that like as a matter of fact, but you don't really think that it will happen to you.
No.
And then it happened.
Yeah. I mean, we do talk about anything, so.
I swing between the, this is the logical thing. It happens. And all that. Of course, on the other hand, I'm also like crawling in pain.
Yeah.
And I said to you about be careful with the conversations you have in your head. Make sure that the things you talk to yourself about, you know, gear that to the right direction. And I also do that to myself too, because sometimes when it gets too painful and I'm thinking about things that what ifs, and I just say to myself, cut it, mate. What ifs won't help.
No. I actually remember on that Sunday afternoon, sitting, maybe it was midday, who knows, sitting in the spot where I'm sitting right now on the couch and kind of looking over at the bookshelf just like I'm doing right now and thinking, my life is never going to be the same. And just having no image of my life, like, as you go about your life, you have your story, which is your past, behind you, and you have somewhat of an idea of the future and the present that you're currently in, but it just felt like the story that I held so dearly, because I was proud of what I'd gone through. Even with Vasa, it wasn't just like I instantly had it sorted straight away, like my life purpose, and it was a rocky road when he was a baby. But I got there as he got a bit older. But it was like when I was sitting here on that Sunday, like my whole future had just been wiped out. It was blank. And I just had no idea what the next day would bring, or the next day would bring. And I guess no desire to fill it with anything anyway. Because my world just fell apart. And I think if it wasn't for you know, people in my family, including you, of course, just reaching out and reminding me that they're there and insisting that they want to be there for me and that I should stay and that life is still good. I really don't think I could have done it.
I have just realized one thing that I need to talk to your brothers about. I need to talk to them about that day. Because my reaction when Vas died was that I need to protect you. I sent your brothers to school the next day.
Wow.
Because I need to be available. If I needed to be by your side, I need to be there. And then I'm looking back, of course, like I said, I mean, there's no manual for all this. Looking back, I questioned that decision. I cannot change it anymore. But I need to talk to your brothers about it. See, in my culture, they wouldn't have gone to school. They would have stayed with me, close to me. But then, of course, I'm in a society where I don't really know what the norm is. So I sent them to school. At the same time, I just want to know that you're going to be safe. I cannot even start grieving. You haven't seen me cry. Because I just cannot go into that mode. I was in a mode of, I need to protect you.
Yeah. I noticed, well, similar to you, because my sister, her being my big sister, and maybe because she's a cop too, so she kind of went in a get things done mode. Well, she did cry, of course, but she went into a get things done mode. I think she called up Vasa's swimming lessons, the ones that she paid for, and told them, you know, sorry, Vasa won't be coming to swimming lessons next week because he's dead. Or calling up Kendi and saying, sorry, Vas won't be coming to Kendi tomorrow because he's dead.
but also our social construct too, that says that men should act this way. Or you women can go start your crying over there and we will make sure that things get done. No one's prepared. No one ever thought that that would happen. Although I know that life's temporary, but, you know,
yeah,
you never think of that until it happens to you. I mean,
yeah,
the very thing that we need to keep in mind is that because it's very temporary, we need to live our life to the fullest.
Mm. And I think even though you say that life is temporary, we automatically assume that, like, as a parent, you won't outlive your child, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, you'll go first, of course.
So that's what I've been asking. I'm yeah. asking you and your brothers, let me go first, okay? You, none of you are allowed to go before.
Yeah.
I'm not a parent, but, like, I can imagine that losing your child would be your biggest fear.
Totally.
And to lose your son so young, you know, would be the worst thing.
Especially when you already have so many insecurities as a young parent about doing the wrong thing. It's horrible that as a society, our institutions make these assumptions about immigrant communities, brown communities, in a way that, like, middle-class Pākehā or wealthy families just don't have to deal with.
You definitely feel like if the Bernals were an upper middle class white family, they would not have been interrogated by the police in the way they were. We're so grateful to the Bernals for opening up on the podcast about Vas and about losing Vas. He's so loved and he's still so much a part of their family, as he always will be.
It's been 3 years since Vas passed and life now is quite different for Donnelly. She recently got married and is now living with her husband in Tauranga.
I took a pregnancy test on Mother's Day, and this was during COVID. Mother's Day isn't as bad as Vas's birthday or Christmas or his death date. But Mother's Day, you know, is still another reminder of the life we used to live and what we used to have. That now we only have in our hearts. Yeah, I took it. Had two lines on it. And I was like, okay. I guess it was something little to smile about, but I don't know, because I'm so familiar with loss, I didn't want to jump up and down and tell the whole world. I wanted to wait it out and feel more secure. How do you feel about me being pregnant? Having a boy?
Cautiously happy.
Yeah.
As you know, you're gonna be in Tauranga and I'm gonna be here, which is a good thing and a bad thing. Good thing because your husband can now stand up and look after you. Bad thing is because I'm too far away. If you need me, I'm 1.5 hours away. But I'm pretty sure you're gonna be in good hands over there. But you can always text me if you want me over there anyway. And I'm hoping that you're going to look at this as a new start. This baby's not going to be a replacement of us. This is a different baby with his own different himself.
Yeah.
You just have to apply what your learnings from your first parenting episode to this one and make it for the better.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that this is, I mean, I didn't really mind whether it's a boy or a girl, just like I've always said, even with Vas, as long as that child is healthy.
Yeah. This was something I thought when I had Vas, when Vas was still alive, the thought of having another child seemed like, how could I love my next child more than I love Vas? Because obviously, like, Vas was my first child, and all that love that you feel when you hold your baby in your arms, and they're just everything to you, that they change your life. And so, yeah, when Vas was still here, the thought of that just made me, I just couldn't understand it. But I brought this up with you, and you've got more than one kid, so you love your other children? Yeah, you love them as much, I'm guessing? Yes.
Yeah, the correct answer to that is yes, of course. You love your kids equally.
Yeah, so I think I feel even more like I'm stepping into the unknown with having lost Vas. And so that feeling of, I don't know how I will feel when I have my baby, you know? It's kind of scary, and I
know how you'll feel.
You sure?
Yes. When you hold the baby for the first time, that feeling. Okay. I mean, I remembered when Vas was born, right, and I held him, and the midwife asked me to check him. I did, and like, I've already like felt that I need to protect him. I remembered I had to argue with them because they had to do another blood test third time, and I was saying that you better do this right because this is going to be the last blood test you're going to do if you're going to get this right. Because I don't want them to be poking him. So it's still going to be that feeling when you hold your child, that feeling of, yes, they will bring their own personality when they grow up. They will be very different, just like you and your siblings are different.
What does home mean to you, Papa?
Home to me is where my family is.
And who do you consider that to be?
You and your brothers and your kids.
Because I'm living in Tauranga right now, and I will be indefinitely. Does that mean you're not at home when I'm not here, or does it still count because we're in the same country?
I know that when you need something, you will still come home to me.
Yeah. And does it become home when we're all together?
We're going to be technical now. It's not something that you can really say, okay, that's home for me, or this is home for me. It's like you feel it.
Yeah.
Home used to be in the Philippines, and now home now is New Zealand. I mean, I cannot imagine being in the Philippines and call that home. Although I can be in the Philippines and feel at home.
So I'm kind of surprised that you say that you can still feel at home in the Philippines. So what makes you feel at home in the Philippines?
Just because I'll blend in.
Yeah?
Yeah, remember, you blend in there too. People start talking to you in Filipino just because they think you are.
Yeah.
I also have memories there too. When I'm with your tito, for example, I can still see that mango tree in the backyard. The other trees are gone. I can still see the same street and all that, you know. Can see some old friends. So I can still feel at home there if I want to, although it's not home, of course. I would still want to come back to New Zealand.
Yep. Well, I do really get a sense of home being around not only you and my brothers, but the extended family, the cousins. Like if all the cousins are there, my sister and my husband. And yeah, I really like the holiday season, December, January, because we get a lot of that. And that's like my happiest time of year. I think I used to be more Hamilton bound. Because I thought that I had to be around my family. My heart is still here, so I feel like when I leave, my heartstrings are being pulled a bit. Yeah. I think my home moves now.
It didn't end up in our final cut of this podcast, but Donnelly did say during the record that she doesn't really know other mums who have been in the same position as her. So we really hope that Donnelly and Alfredo sharing their story in this episode might bring some comfort to other parents who have experienced or who are experiencing anything similar, or that it just might make some parents feel less alone.
Again, our deepest love to Donnelly and Alfredo for sharing so much of your time and your life with us. for letting us ask you so many questions, for showing us so many beautiful photos of Vasily. He mihi aroha ki te whānau.
You can check out photos and videos of all our families on Facebook at Where Are You From Really, Instagram at Combos With My, and on RNZ's website. Conversations with My Immigrant Parents was created, produced, and directed by Julie Zhu and Sarai De Silva. Location recording by Joey Siasoko. Studio recording by Jill Eva Craig at The Secret Beehive. And sound edited and mixed by Emmy Pagoni.
Our cover image is illustrated by Ngā Mutane Jones at Miss Memo and designed by Sonia Milford. A huge thanks also to Kay Elmers and Tim Burnell from RNZ Commissioning. Conversations with My Immigrant Parents was made possible by the RNZ NZ On Air Innovation Fund. He ko nei ipirangi tēnei ma te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.